Welcome to Just a Minute! Yep, that's me, Sue Perkins, and I'm the brand new host of a brand new series of the much-loved panel show.
You have 60 seconds, starting now. A challenge.
I don't know if Hey Nonny No ever becomes legally binding.
It is.
Yes. Hesitation. Repetition.
Deviation.
It was too terrible.
See, I've just proved my own point.
You have 34 minutes remaining, Giles.
34 minutes? This is what I want.
34 minutes. There's been a format change.
Just a Minute with me, Sue Perkins. Monday nights, 6:30 comedy on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
There's a near miss for Justin in the Archers in half an hour, but now it's time for My Teenage Diary. And this week, Rufus is joined by the comedian Deborah Francis White.
Rufus Hound, and welcome to My Teenage Diary, the show where each week I invite brave adults to look back at their teenage past by reopening their genuine diaries and asking themselves, did I really go out of the house dressed like that? Can they recognise themselves when they look back? Have they remained true to their youthful ideals? Will they experience the warm glow of pride or the hot flush of embarrassment? My guest tonight is a comedian, writer and activist, a presenter of the award-winning podcast, The Guilty Feminist. That's what she's like now, but we're about to find out what she was like way back then. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Deborah Francis White! Hello, Deborah.
Hello, Rufus. And how lovely, can I say, to have an audience of any sort. I mean, this sort is especially good.
Deborah, would you tell us what diaries you're reading from today?
Yes, I am reading from my diaries that I kept when I was an adolescent, ages 14 to 16. And it was at a point in my life that was quite seminal because my family were becoming Jehovah's Witnesses. And we had... yes, well, you've obviously had a visit from some of my people and on a Sunday morning, and you're welcome. Just trying to save your life, madam. Just trying to save your life.
It was, I've just never seen an audience of people all immediately pretending to be out. So I imagine this would be the complete opposite of a normal teenage diary. Most teenagers are getting more and more worldly, but I presume you're becoming more and more holy.
Yes, funny you should use the word worldly, actually, because that was the official word for people like you. and people like, I would assume, everyone in this audience. So if you're a Jehovah's Witness, you're said to be in the truth. And if you are anybody else, you're said to be in the world or worldly. So they would, yeah, that word gets thrown around all the time. But who fixed your sink? Oh, a worldly guy came in and did it because Brother Darren was busy.
So Jehovah's Witnesses use the word worldly like wizards use the word muggle in Harry Potter.
Exactly. You have it.
Is there anything more we should know about your life at the time?
Yes, I was born and raised in Australia on the Gold Coast. So if you've seen Home and Away, it's just like that, except extra God.
Family setup?
I was actually adopted. I can't remember it. I was only 10 days old.
Right.
But I have two siblings, an older sister and a younger brother, both born the regular way. I'm the only adoptee.
Oh, wow. And an older sister and a younger brother. Mm. That's quite unusual, isn't it?
Yes.
If there's an adopted child, they're normally like the first or the last, rarely the one in the middle.
That's right. I am actually an eldest child, a youngest child, a middle child and an only child, depending on which way you cut it.
depending on what the casting breakdown lists.
That's right. Because I was my birth mother's first child, and I've since reconnected with my birth mother, and so I was her oldest child. I think... I am my biological father's youngest child because he already had children.
Right.
I am the middle child, but also I'm the only child of my biological parents. So I'm everything that there is possible to be. But I have classic middle child syndrome, you know, I want to be helpful and I don't want to make a fuss.
Right, so you have classic middle child syndrome. That means you want to make everybody's lives as easy as possible, which is why you identify as being all of the other children as well.
Okay, all right. Well, this isn't therapy right here, Rufus, but I will address it on Wednesday evening with Leah.
Well, it's the 1990s in Australia, which, according to my extensive and exhaustive background research, was a time of cricket balls smashing neighbours' windows, people called Charlene and Scott marrying each other, and Bouncer the dog being repeatedly run over in suburban Melbourne cul-de-sacs. But what is Deborah Francis White doing?
Today, Philippa and I went and did a sit-in outside Mrs. Pritchard's office. It's not fair that we can't have music just because there are only six of us and Miss Caldicott is leaving. It's a bit ridiculous. It's like music isn't a proper subject. She said we have to find eight of us who want to do music, and even then we can only have half a teacher. Half a teacher, the bottom half or the top half? That's quite a good joke.
I mean, you've gone on to become a vocal spokesperson for the marginalised and the underrepresented. Do you believe your experience outside of Mrs. Pritchard's office paved the way for the guilty feminist?
I do, actually. Yes, I do. I think it was the first time I realised that if you made a fuss and you wouldn't take no for an answer, things could shift.
Yeah.
Because we were just told in that way that teenagers were told then. I mean, now children are listened to, and I'm not sure if I approve of that. I think broadly I am. Broadly I very much approve of it, but there's some part of sort of having to fight to be heard that I think puts a bit of fight in you.
Right.
But yeah, I realised if you go and you say, I'm not leaving, we're doing a sit-in until we get satisfaction, often people will just let you, they'll just give you what you want because they want the inconvenience to stop.
Yeah.
So yeah, protesting. That was the first time I protested.
Most students would protest to get fewer subjects on their school syllabus. Were you quite swotty, really?
Yeah, I'm so sorry to say that I was. I mean, I only at the subjects I liked. The subjects I didn't like, I had no respect for. PE, terrible. Maths, not interested. My school, though, the thing to be was good at sport. And I couldn't catch anything. I couldn't run anywhere. I couldn't jump over. There was constant high jumping. I don't know why that was such an obsession in Australia. But you had to, and it seemed such a dangerous
thing. Well, in case the kangaroos ever rise up.
Well, probably, yeah. It's this sort of like high jump bar, and you had to run at it really fast and then just leap over it, but no one ever taught you how to do it. And so I never understood how people were doing it. And I just thought, I'm going to fall on that and hurt myself. So I would run up and stop every time. I would just run up and stop. They should have made it low and said, OK, can you get over that? And then made it a bit higher each time. It always seemed implausibly high to me.
So your only criticism of the high jump is it should have been lower?
Basically, yes. What's wrong with the low jump, I say? What's wrong with the low jump?
What's wrong with the low bar?
What's wrong with a low bar? That's why then I moved to Britain as soon as I could, because I heard you had one here.
Well, let's see how this protest went, and we'll join you later on in that day, still causing trouble around school.
We wagged PE and bumped into Mr. Sherwin, who said, good afternoon, girls. PE time, is it? Wander, wander, aimless, aimless. Some of the grade nines, like Mr. Sherwin, we heard one of them saying, I want a poster of Mr. Sherwin, which made us laugh. In English, we had to debate, the female of the species is more deadly than the male. We won, but the other team weren't very bright, so I don't count it. It's not very nice, is it? I'm so embarrassed by this. Can I stop now? Can I actually get out of doing this show? I'm really embarrassed by this. I mean, you've been so many people in your life, hasn't? And this sort of points it out, how many different people you've been in your life and how much you change and how much if you met yourself when you were younger, you'd hate yourself. Do you ever feel that?
I guess we're not really asking people if they would hate themselves when they were younger. More that they feel a duty of care to their previous self, or...
Yeah, I just hate myself at this point.
So what is it about this that you find so shaming, then?
I just find myself, my teenage self, very embarrassing. I think I was quite awkward and covering that with sort of a little bit of showmanship, you know, that kind of feeling. And we did wag PE a lot. Wagging is bunking off. You might know that from Neighbours. Did they have that in Neighbours?
Oh, we're familiar with wagging.
Wagging, yeah. I didn't wag anything. I wanted to go to university and I was extremely studious. But PE, everyone knew that we wagged PE. And because we were the studious girls, nobody minded. So the teachers found it hilarious that we wagged PE and would make these kind of comments to us. And there was a sort of, I don't wonder, wonder, aimless, aimless, was a sort of thing. It was a catchphrase we used to sort of say, do you want to come and, are you doing PE now as well? Do you want to come and wander around the school with me? That it was, it's sort of that kind of thing that I find, oh, I find really embarrassing. I remember writing, oh God, this is, it's genuinely like going to school naked, this. I feel so upset to tell you this. My Philippa and I wrote a song together called The Beaver Ravage. The lyrics, I can't, just don't think I can remember them. It went, oh, the beaver ravage, the beaver ravage. Oh, I remember one part of it was, beaver, in the morning. Beaver, beaver, in the morning. A beaver all through the night. Beaver, beaver. We were very, I think, very socially, how would I put it? We had arrested development almost. Like we didn't, I was Peter Pan. I was not interested in growing up and going to nightclubs and things like that. So some of my friends tell stories about things they did, which we were never invited to because we were seen as the squares, I think.
Right.
Although we did have a number one hit with Beaver Ravage, so, you know.
Well, we'll join you the following year. And now you're 15 and you have temporarily halted your political activism in order to get a part-time job.
That's correct. Yesterday was open day at the Bird Sanctuary. I served so much mashed parrot ice cream, my arm seized up and I couldn't move it at the meeting. It was freezing. My mother said, anyone who isn't wearing an overcoat tonight doesn't have one. I saw Evan. He teased me about my zip earrings. Japanese exchange student coming in a week. Ours is called Yoshiko. Mother's getting a mattress.
I mean, you say your arm got tired after serving too much ice cream, but if you bunk off PE, that's what's going to happen, isn't it?
I remember this happening very well. It was very cold, and there was an open day at the sanctuary, one day of year in respect to Mr. Bird Sanctuary. They made it free, and it was the coldest day of the year because obviously that was the day when people wouldn't pay to come.
Yeah.
And I served so much ice cream. It was just relentless. And I got a sort of, stiff shoulder and I couldn't move. But I remember having to go to the meeting. And the meeting was the meeting at the Kingdom Hall, because by this point we were going to Jehovah's Witness meetings in the freezing cold in the evening. And I remember my mother saying that, actually. I can remember this. Anyone who isn't wearing an overcoat doesn't have one tonight.
So is this the beginning of the process of converting to Jehovah's Witnesses?
Yeah. I started studying when I was 14. But, you know, it wasn't serious then. It was just they would come to our house on a Friday night to begin the brainwashing process. And by the time I was 15, we started going to the meetings and I started knocking on doors, telling people that Armageddon was coming and I was baptised when I was 16.
Had your family been religious before Jehovah's Witnessing?
No, not really. We had a period of time. I had gone to Sunday school. I was quite a holy child. When I was 7, I moved to a new school and all the girls had formed their cliques the year before. So I didn't really have anyone to play with at lunchtime. And I'd always been quite sociable at my other school. But I found this new situation quite challenging and I didn't know how to just go up to an existing group of friends. And I remember this extremely clearly. I used to talk to God because I'd heard at Sunday school, well, God's your friend, you can always talk to him. So in my lunch breaks, I know it's a sad story. In my lunch breaks, I would chat to God. But after a while, there was quite an age gap between me and God. I was 7 and he was immortal, so I wanted friends my own age. And I remember this very clearly. I had a teacher called Miss Power, who I think was named by Charles Dickens, and she was quite fierce, and she announced that there would be auditions for an inter-school dancing competition. And I did ballet and tap and jazz after school, so I was like, right, you know, I can wing this. If I get picked, if I auditioned, and if I get picked, that will be instant friends because I'll be cool because everyone wanted this. I thought, be in this gang of friends, and it's just, you know, this is, I'm on my way. And I remember the day she stood up in front of the class and went, right, we're going to pick the girls for the in-school dancing competition. All the blonde girls stand up. And then she put all of the blonde girls up, lined them up against the blackboard and went down pointing at the one she thought was the prettiest. She thought were the prettiest. And she went, you, and Janine Henney. Janine Henney had brown hair, but she was a really awesome dancer and had trophies to prove it. And it was at this point that I realised if you were brunette, you needed a talent.
Right.
Like that was, you needed extra.
Yeah.
Hair colour was not going to see you through in Australia, right. In my beach town in Australia. I remember asking my mother what age I would have to be to dye my hair. I think it was at that point that that wasn't going to be my way through. So I kept talking to God. And then a girl called Shelley Drake invited me to Girls Brigade, which is a kind of religious girl guide. And so I would go to that and you'd get extra brownie points if you had gone to Sunday school. So I used to go to Sunday school. Had I had blonde hair and been picked for the dancing troupe, my life would have been totally different. You know, you can pin things back. But instead, I got more and more godly. So by the time the Jehovah's Witnesses turned up, my mind was open. Because at 14, your brain's very plastic. It's looking for new community. It's just such an amazing time, adolescence. And that's why, you know, it's a great time to get into heavy metal or ketamine or Jesus. The big three.
The big three.
The holy trinity of peer pressure. And for me, it was Jehovah.
Yeah.
Because I would say the Jehovah's Witnesses, it's a cult. And I say that because a useful definition of the word cult is any group that will not let you leave with your dignity intact.
Right.
And with the Jehovah's Witnesses, the punishment for leaving, willingly or unwillingly, is shunning, but you're not allowed any friends outside of it. So therefore, you are entirely isolated. So the choice is to stay or to be completely abandoned into the world on your own. So that's why I would say it's a cult. And I think sometimes people ask me what kind of person is susceptible to a cult. And yeah. I say, I don't think that's a useful question. The useful question is, at what point in your life are you most susceptible to join a cult? Because I think everybody is, but there has to be fertile circumstances. And for me, that included not being chosen for the interschool dancing competition when I was 7. It was a hard conversion because I was so into everything at school. You know, I was on the debating team and I was in the school play and I was in the school band and, you know, played the flute. And I was such a sort of stimulated, active young mind. And so when I look back on myself now going into this, and I remember teachers trying to deprogram me, they must have just been thinking, oh my God, this kid's got a lot of potential. And I turned my place down at university because I wasn't allowed to go.
Wow. Well, let's hear some more diary. You're now 16 years old.
Oh God. It's so traumatizing. I can't, it's just really traumatic. Okay, but it's a lovely show. Thanks for having me. I have to drop out of the pyjama game because of the school brochure. I've waited so long to be a lead, I'm crying. But I showed Mr. Gilmore the school brochure and he said there was immoral content and fornication in the musical and said I needed to drop out now while there was time to get someone else. Is it bad that I wish I hadn't shown him the brochure? So this is the school's brochure. was a thing that you had to take to school to explain to your teachers why, you know, you couldn't make a Christmas card if there was an art class as when you were little or something. You couldn't, Mother's Day, no, birthdays, no.
The Jehovah Witnesses do's and don'ts for this kid.
But all don'ts, honestly.
Right, just okay.
The don'ts and don'ts.
Yeah.
There's nothing fun. There's nothing fun. Name a fun thing. It's not allowed. Anyway, the school's brochure was to explain to your teachers why you could do nothing. And I remember we were going to see Jesus Christ Superstar. And I remember saying to Mr. Gilmore, I don't think I can come to this because, you know, it's the blasphemous. And he went, oh, just tell your parents you're going to Oliver. And I did go to that. And I'm really surprised looking back that I did go to that because I must have been, you know, when you're cusping on something and you're sort of like, oh, and you're pulling back. And, you know, I remember we had one last family Christmas and we hid the Christmas tree in the bedroom so that the Jehovah's Witnesses did when they came around didn't see.
Right.
We hid it in my brother's bedroom and we had like one last, we said, shall we have one last go at this? And then we'll put it to bed. Which you're not meant to do, of course, you're just meant to, you know, give up.
Yeah.
So you could only get a part in the musical when you were older. Before that, you were only really considered for the chorus. And then it was finally my turn and I auditioned and I got a part. And we were rehearsing, and I took the school brochure in, and I remember Mr. Gilmore going, well, you understand there's sexual innuendo in the musical, so tell us now, you have to drop out now if you're going to drop out. And according to this brochure, you shouldn't be doing it. And I don't know if he was sort of pushing my hand to try and get me to kind of wake up.
Yeah.
But I remember going, well, then, you know, I now can't, as a witness of Jehovah, I can't bring reproach on Jehovah's name, that's how it was said, by staying in it. And I remember coming out to the car, my mum picked me up, and I remember crying.
But otherwise pretty into the whole being a Jehovah's Witness thing?
It's none of it was convenient for me, honestly. This news that Armageddon was coming and going to destroy everything I loved was not the best thing I'd ever heard. It wasn't. But if
You've got that marked down in the negative column, have you?
Okay. I didn't want any of this to be true. But given it was true,
yeah.
I was stuck with it. I was devastated not to go to university, like sobbing, devastated, but it seemed like the only choice. And if you think there's a guy in the sky who's invented you and is soon about to bring an end to the world, then you've got to get on board. I feel like I'm converting you, Rufus. You're nodding in a way that I haven't lost my touch.
Is there any literature I could read about this?
Well, Finally, shut up. I'm now an undercover Jehovah's Witness.
Well, let's continue with your diary from the same day.
Okay. Brother Rich said tonight at the meeting that we have to serve Jehovah with our whole soul and not have a hole in our soul. He said we have to stick to Jehovah like glue and be faithful to him no matter what. I know that's right, and I want to be a faithful servant of Jehovah. But then I think of King David, who Jehovah loved, but who also had a man killed because he wanted to marry his wife. Fair point. I feel like being in a musical isn't anything like as bad as that. Anyway, Brother Rich said the end is coming and all our questions will be answered in the new system if we are faithful. He also said I'd be able to do all the acting and singing I wanted under Jehovah's loving arrangement, but I can't really imagine that. All the illustrations just show people eating fruit. I really love I'm Not At All In Love and will miss singing it a lot. Miss Gavin said Tanya Keenan would probably get my part. I cried this afternoon. I want to be in steam heat, but I also want to be like Ruth. Ruth chapter 2, verse 12. May Jehovah reward you for what you have done, and may there be a perfect wage for you from Jehovah the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. I'm going to write that on my folder to remind me. Flute tomorrow so I can get out of double maths, thankfully.
So a man called King David had a bloke killed so he could cop off with his wife, but a teenage girl can't star in a slightly saucy school play. Mm-hmm. Did you see this as religion being hypocritical or the gender divide being unfair?
Oh, both. The gender divide was... I mean, I was always a massive feminist as a Jehovah's Witness, which you were not allowed to be. But it was boiling up in me the rage about how women were talked about in the Bible all the time and the way women were treated in the organisation all the time. It's a high-control group and all the controlling is being done by men. And it upset me all of the time. But again, that's Jehovah's loving arrangement.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem that loving when you're in it. It seems more like The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. Well, we're reaching the end of your teenage diary, Deborah Frances White. And so we'll take the last entry that we have here, please.
16 years old. Today I went witnessing with Leslie. We went to a caravan park and no one was interested. And then we went to do some rural territory. We drove up to the top of a driveway and dogs ran around the car, so we couldn't get out without being savaged. I think they were Doberman. Then, at another house, a man came out with a shotgun and no clothes on. I actually hate rural territory, but I think that's why I should do it, to become more like Paul, who was so faithful he was beaten and imprisoned and kept going. How will I cope in the persecution if I can't handle dogs? We're having roast chicken tonight and then caramel tart, which I'm making with condensed milk. Got to go. The Beatles in retrospect is on Matthew 24:14.
So you're out and about knocking on doors. It sounds fairly dangerous.
Oh, it was awful all of the time.
Was it?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, I think anyone who's had the experience of the Jehovah's Witnesses knocking on their door and opening it, realising who's there, variously smiling politely or just saying no thank you or just closing the door or screaming and shouting. Mm-hmm. I think we all have some empathy for the people doing the knocking.
Oh, I don't think most people do. I think that's very generous of you. Oh, people could be so aggressive. And most of the time it's just boring. People weren't home or people would just say they weren't interested. And it's just very unstimulating. And I'd come from a very stimulating environment at school of, you know, studying lots of stimulating, exciting subjects and doing lots of, you know, music and drama and things like that. And then just went to... So boring. But, you know, you could get a good conversation going sometimes. And if you did, if anyone took the Watchtower, you got a good conversation, you used to write the name and address down and then you'd go back and back and back and back until one of you died. That's how it works. So if you have been nice to the Jehovah's Witnesses because you're a kind person, but you're not interested, if you are interested, obviously, fine, that's not for me to say. Don't do it. But if you aren't interested and you just think, oh, I don't want to be rude, but how do I get them to stop coming? You have to say these words. Do not call here anymore, please, because you take my name off the list of people you call on or even put my name on the do not call list. You have to say that or they will never stop coming. Because someone like me, I only had so many return visits. I only had so many people who I'd had a good conversation with.
Yeah.
So you're trying to convert people all the time and set them up for a Bible study. I would recommend the empathy you feel for the Jehovah's Witnesses, which is, you know, lovely of you, doesn't turn into inviting them in for a cup of tea unless you want more.
So you're no longer a Jehovah's Witness.
I hope not. Otherwise, I'm going to be disfellowshipped.
What happened?
Well, I started travelling, which you're not... It's inadvisable to do that because you're going to wake up... The same reason they don't want you going to university, really, is you're going to have other sources of information. And I just started to figure it out and wake up, and I decided I was never going to go back to the Jehovah's Witnesses, to go back to the Kingdom Hall out of guilt. I was only going to go if I wanted to go, and I never went again. And then I realized, I remember having a strong epiphany that I was going to not live forever, that I was going to die. In my 20s, I just went, in my early 20s, I was like, okay, I'm going to die. So I need to live. And I thought, right, I'm going to go to university. I started doing comedy improv like day one. And so as soon as I left, like the day one of leaving a cult where everything's thought through for you, you have to say the party line, you have to do exactly what you're told, you have to wear what you're told. I went to improv class, and improv class is all about yes, and it's all about trusting yourself. And it took me a while to open my mouth and trust what I was going to say. But that was, it's the best antidote to a high control group is improv, is yes and. And so I left and I got into that and I applied to university and I got in immediately. I got in on my old school grades as well. I got into Oxford on my old school grades. So this wasn't that I wasn't academic, it's just what can happen to you, you know, that you, I can't believe now that I thought I was gonna live forever on paradise earth, that I did think that, I really, really did. And I remember I was working as a nanny and I remember taking this little girl to ballet. And I was watching her through the glass, and I saw there was a man next to me, and he was a father, just like looking at his daughter, being so proud. And we were always told not to have children. It's sort of a reverse Handmaid's, because we should be knocking on doors. You shouldn't be like taking time out. And there was a scripture that said, woe betide the nursing mother on the day of, you know, Armageddon, basically. But I remember looking at this man, being so happy, and thinking, oh my God, I want this. I want life. I want this now. It's not, they kept saying, always say, put everything off, put everything off. It's all in the paradise. In the paradise, you can have children. In the paradise, you can own your own home. In the paradise, you can have everything you want. And I just thought, this isn't coming. If you want it, you better take it now. Hmm. And I applied to university and I went straight away. I went Jack Kerouac style across America before I went to university. And I, people often say to me, you do a lot of stuff. You know, you're doing a podcast and a play and a film and an activism and blah, blah, blah. It's because I know I'm going to die. And most people have no clue. It's just, most people have a vague awareness of mortality, but you're faced with it when you leave. It just sort of comes, it rushes at you and you go, this isn't going to happen. Armageddon's not coming. It's not going to happen. And you live now or forever hold your peace.
So now that you've read your diaries, what would you say to the younger you?
Run as fast as you can. Just get through that bit, go along with it. Don't be seen to be rebelling from it, but say that you need to be older before you're baptized, because baptism's a huge decision and that you need to check out university first and then just plow your own furrow.
And what would the younger you say back?
Oh, she'd say, would you like a copy of The Watchtower?
We always ask our guests to choose a piece of music that sums up their teenage years. What have you chosen and why?
I've chosen Losing My Religion by R.E.M. The why is pretty obvious.
It is indeed. So as we enjoy R.E.M., ladies and gentlemen, Deborah Frances White. My Teenage Diary is a talkback production for BBC Radio 4. It was presented by me, Rufus Hound, and starred guest, Deborah Frances White. The producer was Harriet Jane. I will go to the distance in
your eyes. Next week, Rufus will be joined by the actor and In-Betweeners star, Joe